If I ask 10 of you, what is your current fitness goal? There might be 20 different answers. And how you answer that question will determine the most effective workout for you. For example, if it's to build a six-pack, we'd be thinking about weights and resistance training. If it's to lose fat, then we would want to be adding some cardio. And if it's to be healthier, we would add a few other elements as well. So what's your exercise goal? Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello, I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Many people are drawn to exercise because it will change how they look. Others because it will improve their body's performance. Whereas for others, it's because they're facing a life-threatening illness. Like Vinny, here's his story from the University of Connecticut Health Center.
My name is Vinny Jankowski. There you go. 51 years old. I work at UConn Health Surgery Center. I'm a surgical tech there. A few years ago, I was diagnosed with ascending aorta aneurysm in my heart. Over the years, it's getting weaker and weaker. When you first hear aneurysm, all you can think about is, how much time do I have left? It scared the hell out of me.
We're gonna start the day off by getting a weight on you.
My goal is to lose weight, lower my cholesterol, lower my blood pressure.
170 over 90.
Fine. Feel healthier, get off my medication. Live longer, walk my daughter down the aisle. She's ready. I've tried other ways to try and lose weight. Dieting never works. It just seems like everything that I have is the wrong stuff to have. But it's so good. And then I met Brad. I met through the cardiology department.
How you doing, Vinny?
Right now I feel like crap.
Okay. If we can get those where the HDL is higher than the LDL, that's going to reduce your risk significantly.
Brad actually made it. Seems like it's something I can achieve just by changing some of the stuff that I do.
What do you think of your weight?
I think it's huge.
Since October 16th, you're down almost 7 pounds.
I could actually lower my blood pressure and lower my cholesterol. I always kid around that the only exercise I get is either running off at the mouth, jumping the conclusion, or flying off the handle.
We want to think of when we can get you like onto a treadmill.
Right now, the only exercise he wants me to do is walk 20 minutes a day, 3 days a week.
Exercise is the number one thing, and not doing high intensity. I mean, you can just get on the treadmill and walk. If we can make little changes, and each area can have a positive effect, whether it's on his risk of diabetes, you know, just overall how he feels.
So it's going to take a little willpower on my side to do this. With the right help and guidance, I think I can really do it.
And we'll see if he did it later in the show. We'll also talk to his lifestyle coach, try an entirely new dish in the kitchen, catch an exercise segment with Sean, but now the news. In the headlines today, biking for your heart, holidays or feast days, and walking off those sugars. Regular biking lowers the risk of heart disease and optimizes heart health, according to two recent Scandinavian studies. A Danish study showed a 25% lower risk of heart disease in those aged 50 to 65 who began and continued cycling over the next 15 years, compared with those who did no cycling. And Swedish researchers did a 10-year study of 20,000 people in their 40s, 50s and 60s and found that those commuting to work by bicycle had lower weight, blood pressure, cholesterol and less risk of diabetes than those who didn't bike. What a fun way to improve heart health and extending your life. Different countries celebrate different holidays, but they all have one thing in common: favourite foods that pack on the pounds. A study in the New England Journal of Medicine found significant weight gain during the Christmas New Year period in America and Germany, and during Golden Week in Japan. Other holidays, such as Thanksgiving in America and Easter in Germany, were also found to be times of significant weight gain. And while half the weight was lost shortly after the holidays, the other half remained until 6 to 9 months later and beyond. And for American children, school holidays have been found to be the time when kids put on significant amounts of weight. So it sounds like we all might benefit from a little more self-control during our holidays. For people with type 2 diabetes, a short walk after eating helps to lower blood sugar levels more than walking at other times of the day, according to a recent New Zealand study. Participants were advised to walk either 30 minutes once a day or for 10 minutes after each main meal. Blood glucose levels were measured for 3 hours after a meal. Walking after meals gave better blood glucose control than walking for 30 minutes at another time of the day. The walking effect on blood sugar was most noticeable when meals contained a lot of carbohydrates. So why not walk for 10 minutes after your largest meal of the day at a pace where you can still hold a conversation? I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Today's guest is Brad Biskup, a physician's assistant and exercise physiologist who started the Lifestyle Modification Clinic at University of Connecticut's Health Center. I asked him for the statistics regarding the effectiveness of exercise at preventing disease.
Look at overall breast cancer risk, which is so important for women, and you can see, you know, they've been shown up to 40% reduction in primary and secondary prevention. When you look at cardiovascular disease, especially with diabetes, you know, 95% of the diabetics in the United States are type 2 diabetics. Almost 90% are preventable, and that's understanding how you use the exercise component to help increase the insulin sensitivity, and that's where you can help understand how you can control it. And that's one thing.
Those numbers are phenomenal. When you think about any medication out there, it doesn't come close.
No, not at all.
Not even 10% of that number.
Exactly.
So this is a very effective medicine, isn't it? Really?
Well, and you look at the medicine of exercise, you know, it's been shown to treat and prevent over 40 different diseases. But we don't think about it because, oh, it takes time, it takes structure. And unfortunately, we haven't developed that part of medicine as much as we have in the other areas.
That's right. But getting cancer can be a real wake-up call. And that can really change your perspective. And the other thing about exercise is it is fun, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's where I think, unfortunately, we kind of have, going back in the 80s, no pain, no gain. You got to really work hard. And I think to get the true benefit, we have to be able to maintain the exercise. And that's why you have to look at the injury risk and being able to do the things that are fun, like you said. And that's why, you know, women are much better than men in general because they do things socially, you know, with going for walking groups, and they make it fun. And that's what, you know, the important thing is. You don't have to just, you know, sweat and just feel the pain and everything. You can make it fun.
Mm. How big a risk for premature death is not getting exercise or not being fit?
If we look at your risk of, you know, overall mortality, you know, we always think of smoking, we think of being overweight. And if you look at the number one thing that increases your risk is inactivity. That is almost probably about 3 to 4 times more important than obesity. But we always focus on the obesity. That's the first thing we focus on when patients come to the office. Instead of asking them, are you doing your walks? Are you being active?
Right, because when I go see my doctor, the first thing they do is have me sit on the scale. Mm-hmm. And I have a pretty good doctor. By the end of the consultation, she will ask me about exercise. But that's very rare. Not many doctors do that.
Yeah, and that's the problem. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do the talk, is just kind of explain to people what is our biggest risk factor. And it's inactivity. And the more we kind of keep each other aware of that and finding things that we can help people. You know, we're so used to setting them up to fail with a lot of the exercise guidelines, and we have to be much more receptive and just saying, how can we get our patients to be successful?
After the break, let's see how successful Vinny has been, but first this.
Hey, let's have a big party this weekend.
You won't have time or energy to organize that.
Yes, I will. I'm full of energy. I feel great. I'll text people right now.
No, think about it first.
No. 200 people invited. There.
Oh, no. 200? I think that's the energy drink talking.
Oh, I feel terrible. Why did I invite 200 people to that dumb party?
I don't know, but I think the caffeine just wore off.
Oh, you're right. I just need some more caffeine. I'm out of energy drink. I'll go get some coffee. Oh, I feel so much better now. I've ordered now 3 bouncy castles for that party for the children this weekend.
Oh, great. But you're a drug addict.
No, I'm not. I don't take drugs.
Yes, you do. You get jittery, sleepy, and headachey if you don't have a coffee or energy drink in your hand.
So?
Well, those are all symptoms of drug addiction. Caffeine is actually classed as the world's most popular drug.
Really?
Uh-huh. So lead a steady life by avoiding social drug addiction. Doctor's orders. Welcome back. I wish you could be here because there is something cooking on this grill that is just wonderful. And Phil, what are we doing today?
Well, today I'm going to introduce our viewers to a flour that has become part of my regular diet, regular enough diet.
Flowers. And it's
a flour, but it's something that people have seen a lot of, hopefully, artichokes.
Oh, yeah. It's a thistle. It's a flour. It's a thistle. It's both.
It is. And it's something that a lot of people haven't tried or they might be a little bit scared of because it does take a little bit of effort. You too.
Mm-hmm. I'll confess now. Yeah.
Well, hopefully after this we'll change it because it's not as scary as you might think and it can be really good.
Uh-huh. All right. So what are you doing to the artichokes?
So for this recipe, we have 2 artichokes. We have 2 teaspoons of minced garlic, 2 teaspoons of chopped rosemary, 2 teaspoons of chopped oregano, 1 teaspoon of olive oil, and the juice of 1 lemon.
Mm.
So it's a very healthy recipe. We're not adding a lot of fats or anything like that, but it's got some great flavor. So to start it off, we want to prepare our artichoke. And I like to just cut off the base here. You can take off the leaves at the bottom. I generally don't do that, but they are kind of tough, so a lot of people do that. And you can have a lot of sharp pointing parts at the top. So I like to cut off about the first inch, or the top inch.
Okay.
So you're going to need a good knife.
That's where you find that it is a thistle, really, because it's got those pointy bits.
Absolutely. So you want to be careful, because it will poke you. And what you want to do is just kind of pull it apart at the top. And it's a beautiful vegetable.
Mm.
And we don't have the pot here, but what you want to do is steam it. So I'll turn the water on high. I'll get it to a rolling boil. I'll put this in. Oh, actually, I like to cut it in half.
On a steamer?
Yep. Right on a steamer,
yes. On a steamer, okay.
And once I get the water boiling, I'll turn it down to low, cover it, and leave it on for about 35 minutes. Now, I forgot. One thing I really like to do, and this is something I've been doing more recently, is I like to just cut it in half. That makes it a little easier to cook, and you'll see later on in the recipe that that'll come in very handy. But so basically, we're going to steam this for about 35 minutes. I like to check the water every 10 to 15 minutes, and that just is to make sure that there's enough water in there so that we don't ruin the pot.
The tide didn't go out, yeah.
Right. So what we've done here is we actually have, these have been cooked, these have been steamed, and so now we're going to grill them.
Mm. Now, do you want me to cut these?
If you could cut those, that would be great. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to brush our olive oil onto this. And that'll just get it so that it doesn't stick to our grill. And then we're going to put it down. We're going to grill this face down for about 10 minutes. Now, an interesting thing. I heard that in the 1600s, women weren't allowed to eat artichokes.
Is that right?
It was because, and granted, this was certain societies, but because it was considered an aphrodisiac. So they figured that it was just best to limit the people that eat it.
Oh. It's a little chauvinistic, don't you think?
Very
male
much
chauvinistic.
So. Yeah. Thankfully, society's changed a little bit since then.
Yeah, because they discovered that it wasn't an aphrodisiac after all, and women could be allowed to eat that. All right.
Well, all right.
There's our fun fact.
That's the fun fact.
I read that, and this might not be true, but, you know, Hippocrates said, let food be your medicine and medicine be your food. and that he was talking about the artichoke, but maybe that's not true.
That would be a terrific one to say that. As I've said, I absolutely love artichokes.
Mm.
They're great food.
Well, you're going to have to sell me on it, but I'm open to being sold on it. It's just where I come from, we don't actually grow them, so...
Well, and that's
the
one
thing.
The
only ones I've had are out of a can.
There are very limited areas where they grow. In fact, in the U.S., commercially, it's only in California. And I've never known anyone to grow it in their own gardens. So it's one thing that the only place I've ever seen it is in the grocery store.
I see. Okay.
So we've got our one half that we have face down. You want to grill that for about 10 minutes.
All right.
We have our other half that we've already grilled it. And you can see the terrific color that's from
beautiful.
That.
Beautiful. And this garlic smell is just fantastic.
And it's a great flavor. So what I've done is I've brushed it with oil, put the garlic on, put our herbs on. And
right,
we're gonna,
and we have rosemary and oregano, so
it's a terrific mixture.
Great. Mm.
So we're going to grill that for 5 minutes, and that'll be done.
Yep.
Finally, we have our finished product here.
Oh, and you'll probably want this lemon?
Absolutely.
Do you put this on?
The lemon comes on when it's all done.
Oh.
You want to do it just before you eat it.
Okay.
And that's actually the way that I prefer it. I've heard that on the East Coast, they like dipping it in butter. On the West Coast, they like mayo. I personally just prefer straight lemon.
And that's so much healthier.
So much healthier.
So how do we eat this?
So I'm actually going to, I'll introduce you to two ways to eat it.
Mm.
The prim and proper way is to take a leaf, and then you just want to pull it through your teeth. And you get the little bit of the meat that's at the bottom.
Mm. Very nice.
And then you work down to the stem, which, and I'm just going to cut off a little piece for you. You work down to the stem, which is my favorite part.
Oh, really?
And this
really?
Is where you really get more of the meat of it.
So that's why you didn't want, thank you, that's why you didn't want to cut the stem too much.
Absolutely.
Mm. Very nice. Well, there's a new one for me, Phil. Thank you very much. You'll have to try it. If you want to copy down that recipe, you'll find it on our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. Now, back to Vinny, who suddenly learned he had an aneurysm, that the main blood vessel exiting his heart was bulging like a blowout in a car tire. He had to slow its progression by controlling his weight, his blood pressure, and his cholesterol, or he would die. He was referred to Brad at Connecticut's Lifestyle Modification Clinic. Let's see how he did.
Feel great. I lost about 30 pounds. I went from 3X scrubs down to an XL. I'm a lot more active than what I was before. Before I was a couch potato. Even my kids have noticed it. They're like, Dad, you see you doing a lot more stuff. My priorities are straight. My family's number one. My health. And by doing that, the weight's come off. My stress has dropped. My blood pressure has dropped. Everything's been going great.
His physical activity has increased. I think he has become much more conscious of his own health and what he eats. He seems very proud of the changes that he's made.
Specialty handsets. My co-worker's been great.
I've worked with Vinny for about 7 years now, and he's been working really hard at this. He's definitely more positive about a lot of things and happy. He seems peaceful.
It's not about more losing weight, is about, you know, taking care of your high blood pressure in diabetes and cholesterol, because that could affect you later on.
People I don't even know. They've texted me with support. They see me walk in. Hey, you're the guy from the video. Like, yeah, well, it's funny because a lot of people think that this is a weight loss thing. To me, it's not a weight loss video. To me, it's based on my aneurysm. I lower my blood pressure. It's less pressure on the aneurysm.
136, 84.
If I never met Brad, was that eventually it would have burst one day. I mean, I just can't say enough about the guy.
Keep it up.
He's just incredible.
Yeah, thank you.
You guys are doing great.
Thanks, Brad.
They sure are. Now, Vinny's job as a surgical tech meant he was on his feet a lot during the day. But for many of us, we're forced to sit at a desk all day. To combat the health effects of all that sitting, we need to do an hour of moderate to vigorous exercise every day. But what if we don't? Here's physician's assistant Brad Biscup with the answer.
99% of us don't get really, really high intensity, high duration exercise. Mm. So we look at that risk, and it can increase about 30-40% at least just sitting.
So an 8 hours sitting per day will increase your risk 30-40%.
It can very easily. And that's why the creativity of finding movement within that 8 hours, a standing desk. And that's why when we think of exercise and activity, it's not just going to the gym and doing the recommended. It's thinking of, okay, sitting does significantly increase our risk, and we just need to be more mindful and creative in how we don't have to sit as much.
So give us some tips as to how we could, you know, we're paid to be at our desks.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's at home all day, they're flexible.
Exactly.
We're paid to sit at our desks for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. We clock in, we clock out at the
end. Exactly.
So how can we sort of push some exercise or activity mm-hmm. into the corners of that day?
And if you think of some of the creativity is getting, you know, we call it a peddler underneath the desk and just like peddling.
That's what I do, yeah.
And that's where the creativity of finding movement, because some people have desks where they can't do a standing desk. They have all these monitors and everything. So having a peddler, being inefficient, which means, okay, I got to print out this document and I'm going to print it to the farther printer and walk down and get it. I have to walk down 2 flights of stairs to go to another, or I just either take the elevator or the stairs, and I'm going to take the stairs as much as possible. Here, how many people even know where the stairs are in the hotel?
Well, I notice in America that hotels hide the stairs. Yep. In New Zealand, that's not the case. You can always find the stairs. So it's a different mindset, isn't it, really?
It is, and I think the American way of doing things easy. We always want to think of the easy way of doing things. But when we think of doing things easy, it's a disservice to our body. You know, we think of, even with our foods, plant-based whole foods, let our body break them down naturally, looking for activities. You know, when I talked to my 91-year-old dad about doing activities, he still, him and his my stepmom, basically, they make quilts. And they will make 6 in a week. They donate to this national organization. He goes for his 15-20-minute walk every day. You know, he does some chair rises to work on his strength. He still gardens. And so and really embracing overall living and activity is the most important thing.
Absolutely. And I think our society used to be active because we had to do all those
exactly.
things. Now we don't have to. So we're not forced to do it, so it has to be an act of choice. Now, what if we've sat at our desk for the whole day, mm-hmm. and then we jump in the car, drive home, have dinner, and then sit again? Does that increase our risk of premature death?
Yeah, literally, the more we sit and are less active, we get a continual increase. And that's where just standing versus sitting. Say you stand or you sit for 8 hours. And then, okay, next week I'm going to cut that in half. I'm just going to stand at my standing desk for 4 hours less. That actually will cut down about 500 calories a day, or actually expend 500 calories more a day, just that little change. So when we think of that 500 calories that day, well, in 7 days there's a pound of weight loss. So you think of just being creative in how we can make the muscles move more. And we have over 650 muscles in the body. We can find lots of them to do and doing different things.
Great. And we don't have to spend a lot of money to have a standing desk either. We can we can put boxes or razors under our monitors and computers and keyboards and things, can't we? Now, does being fit, if we are sitting, we're mm-hmm. paid to sit all day, does being fit have an advantage, even if we're the weekend warrior, where we're not necessarily doing it during the, mm-hmm. during the week, but we're really getting the maximum kind of energy expenditure mm-hmm. at the weekends. Does that make a difference to our premature death risk?
It does help, but one thing I'm very, very careful of with all my patients is when I look at exercise, the side effect is injury. And I'm very, very cautious of injury. It's just like when I give a patient blood pressure medication and their blood pressure drops, that side effect, that's the same thing I think of with exercise. And so I'm very cautious of the weekend warrior doing high intensity because the injury rate is so high and the likelihood of continuing is very, very low. So when I sit down with a patient and they're 65 years of age, I'm thinking, okay, how can we get you to be 100 years of age, being independent, doing what you want to do? And that's how we set up our exercise program activities to focus on the things that are going to help them achieve that goal.
Mm. Coming back to the fitness, does the fitness piece make a difference to premature death rates or not?
Absolutely. Fitness level, if you look at someone's fitness level, whether they exercise or they're very active in, you know, their job, whatever that is, a factory worker, but they're very active, they maintain their fitness level, has a significant effect on their mortality. So if you look at just their fitness or if they exercise, if both of them are the same, both of them have that same decrease in as far as the risk of mortality.
So how much exercise do we need to do to ameliorate the effect of the 8 hours of sitting? How much a day?
Once, and you look at the guidelines and they talk about the med hours, which is, you know, you think of walking for 2 miles an hour and you walk for an hour, that's considered one med hour. So you'd have to do 7 of those in a week on the guidelines. If you look at get the truly benefit, they're talking about 35 med hours per week, which is a lot. And very, very few of us will do that.
Few of us do, but more of us could. Here's why. Just as the ocean is in constant motion, we were designed to be active in order to fulfill our purpose. Inactivity causes disease, while exercise strengthens the heart, quickens the mind, and gives vigor to the body. And who wouldn't want that? Like the daily tide, our designer put within us a rhythm. There's the rhythm of our heart, breathing, our digestion, and our sleep, and so on. And so rhythmic exercise also suits us well. Things like walking, cycling, swimming, and running. And for optimal function of the whole body, we need to stay fit. If we break in an arm and it sits in a cast for a few weeks, it shrinks and loses strength. And in the same way, being sedentary has the same effect on all our muscles, and we lose fitness. Whereas regular exercise builds us up. Perhaps that's why God says 6 days we should be active and 1 day we should rest. So why not try it? We're back and it's our moving moment. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I'm ready to move.
You are?
Yeah.
Well, I'm ready to make you move.
All
right.
Uh-oh.
Let's go. We're going to jump right into it. Let's assume that everyone has watched us before and they know how to warm up.
Okay.
What I want you to do is take your weight, and sometimes having the weight in your hand, right? Of course, you know, adds resistance, right? But what we're going to do is an alternating lunge. All right. We're going to start with an alternating lunge. All the way here. Take a nice deep breath. All right. I want you to keep on continuing, right? Now, the beauty of the lunge is that it's working the quad, the heart rate is going up. It allows you to engage the core because you want to point your chest forward. The last thing you want to do is do this with your lunge, all right? You want to keep that core tight. Do 2 more, one on each side, yep. And perfect. Drop the weight for a second. So I love to use lower body exercises and then jump to upper body exercises and do a core exercise. All right, so have a seat right here.
All right.
Keep the body nice and firm. You know, if you've never sat on a stability ball before, just sitting on the stability ball is a challenge, right?
Yeah.
So what we're gonna do is take this right here, point the palms forward, right there, right by your shoulder, and we're gonna do presses. Aim for about 10 of them, all right? Go all the way up, press, perfect. Now remember, you gotta keep the body nice and tight.
We sure do, otherwise we would end up on the floor.
Or you're going to end up right on the floor. That is right. We're going to aim for 10 of those. Give me 2 more. Set your timer for about, for 10 if you want to do 10, or you can set your timer for about 30 seconds. All right, 3, okay. 2, and 1. All right, come off, keep the weight in your hand. And we're going to go into rows, okay? Come right,
right
over here. Bend over just a little bit, just like that. Extend the arm all the way out. And pull the weight all the way up. Again, you can aim for about 10 to 15 reps, or you can set your timer for about 30 to 45 seconds. Either way, it's a good challenge. Choose a weight that's gonna challenge you. Extend all the way out. Give me two more. One and two. Stand up nice and tall. Now, last one. Weight is right here. And I want you to come all the way up just like that. Work your delt. Back here. Nice and slow. When you get to this position here, you're squeezing that delt. All right, don't lose the opportunity there. Right here, all the way back up and back down. All right, again, 10 to 15 reps or 30 to 45 seconds. 3, 2, and 1. And I'm gonna show you how this works. You take that weight and go back to your lunges. Go back to the lunges, come on.
Ooh.
You're my client today, come on, yes, yes. 1, come on, 2, 3. Give me two
we
more.
We had enough moving yet.
4, come on, and 5. Nice work, have a seat.
Ooh.
All right, have a seat. This is how you burn calories. You can minimize the rest in between. Point the palms forward, aim for 10 to 15 reps, go. Yes, come on, 2, give me 3 more. 1, come on, 2, here you go, 3. All right, pop up, there you go, pop up. Go right to your rows. We're gonna burn those calories today. We said we're gonna move, right? Bend them. Yep. Boom. There you go. 2. Give me 3 more. 1. Come on. You got it. 2 and 3. Stand up nice and tall. Burn those calories. Yes. It burns. It's a great feeling,
it
isn't it?
It burns.
You said we're going to move today, right? This is all about moving, right? 30 minutes?
I thought we were going to move.
No, I am. Look. Look at the heavy weight. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you're an excellent partner.
Oh.
Is it my turn? No.
Yeah.
So again, the beauty of burning calories, right?
Yeah.
Is you can either work out longer, which is not, you don't always have the time.
Don't always have the time.
Right?
No.
Or you can minimize the time and the rest keeps your heart rate up a little bit and you're just burning those calories post-workout.
Right.
Which is awesome, right?
Yeah, it is.
All right, let's stretch it out. We use those quads, right? So let's work on some balance. Take one leg. Oh, this is tough. It is tougher than it looks, right? You want to stretch the quads. You've done those lunges with the weight. 3, 2, 1, bring it down. Then switch. Get a good stretch. Point the chest forward. Take a deep breath. All right, relax. All right. One another great exercise, take your right knee, put it right here, and push back. You're working a little bit of the balance. I know, it's not easy. It is not easy. And switch. You gotta stretch after you work out or you wake up the next morning and you're gonna say, go healthy for good, did that for me. Did that.
And it will remind you to
it will
watch
remind you.
The show.
It will. All right, relax. Open and close. Alternate your right hand on the top and your left hand on the top. Take a nice deep breath. Shake it out, and you are good.
Well, thanks.
You're very welcome.
Good.
You're very welcome.
What's for dinner tonight? Well, you might want to add something to the menu, a simple green salad. This small addition could make a big difference. You see, recently, the Adventist mortality study found that people who ate green salad had lower all-cause mortality. In other words, those who regularly enjoyed raw leafy greens lessened their risk of death. Isn't that reason enough to add a salad to your dinner plans? A green salad is another ageless advantage.
It's time for the questions that you've sent in by Facebook, text, and phone. Here's our first one. Norma asks, I have a question. My 20-year-old son has been diagnosed with Crohn's disease. Do you have any suggestions for addressing this problem? Well, I suggest a low inflammatory diet, which would be plant-based, and that can be really effective for over 90% of people with this condition. Check out the show that we created on inflammatory bowel disease, and point him perhaps also to Dr. Greger's website, nutritionfacts.org, where he can enjoy watching video clips and blogs on Crohn's disease. It'd be really helpful. Here's our next question. Florence asks, I saute my mushrooms in water. Can I freeze them to eat later, or will it harm my health? Actually, Florence, mushrooms can be prepared in any way and they'll still be beneficial for your health. Last question. Someone called and asked, I have a bad disc in my neck. Will the exercises that you do on the show help my neck? Well, not specifically, but you know, it's really important to have good, strong core muscles for the proper function of the spine. And so if your spine is, the rest of your spine functions well, it's going to support the area where you have the problem. But you should also have a therapist give you specific muscle exercises for your neck. Now remember, you can send me your questions in all these different ways. And you like us on Facebook for daily health tips and videos. Now let's see what's on the menu today. Oranges are, well, orange inside and out. There are many varieties, bitter or sweet, thick skin or thin, easy to peel or not. They originated in Asia, around China and Indonesia, and then they went from there to India and then on to the rest of the world. Mostly now they're grown in Brazil and Florida. Oranges are a great source of potassium, magnesium, vitamin C, fiber, calcium and folate, which are all important for pregnancy. One medium orange is about 60 calories, and it's hard to overindulge in them because they're so full of fiber. Orange zest is a secret ingredient in many recipes, and just below the zest is the pith. It's bitter, but it's loaded with powerful bioflavonoids that are recommended for fighting colds and flus, so don't be afraid to eat it. However, there's nothing like a small glass of freshly squeezed orange juice to wake those taste buds up in the morning. Bon appetit. Today's guest is physician assistant and exercise physiologist Brad Biskup. I asked him about the 2008 physical activity guidelines for Americans.
These definitely are scientifically based. We have all the studies done previously, and with any of the guidelines, you know, when we look at them, they go through all the research years and years and years, and they're looking at what has been shown to be the most beneficial. And they break it into the moderate intensity versus high intensity exercise. And that's where they came up with the 300 minutes per week, or basically 300 minutes per week of moderate intensity, or 150 of the high intensity to get the most benefit. But if you want to have still significant but not quite ideal, they're looking at 150 minutes a week of moderate or 75 of high intensity the exercise, as well as, which one thing never really gets pointed out, they do significantly increase or recommend to increase your activity. That's one of the very first things they talk about, but it seems like everybody skips over that and goes right into the moderate and high intensity exercise.
So they separate out just your activity during the day as mm-hmm. well as your exercise. So we need both, right?
Exactly.
We need both. So run through that again. So there's 150 minutes moderate intensity exercise. Now, there's also the resistance exercise component, mm-hmm. isn't there, which
is... Exactly. And as we get, especially as we get older in general, we don't have as good a muscle strength, which does increase your risk of overall all-cause mortality. So when we look at doing muscle strengthening things, especially with the legs, and it could be doing a chair rise, you know, and they talk about, oh, doing squats, but if you're at home, just getting up out of chair and doing that 10 times in a row. Doing things with our upper body, a lot of times we don't think of picking up something and doing it repetitively as exercise and increasing the strength, because to increase strength, we have to increase the load on the muscle. And so that's why, however, we can do that and we can get the benefit.
And so as we repeatedly lift something, the load becomes less because we become stronger.
Exactly.
So we need to actually increase in a stepwise fashion.
Yeah.
Don't do exactly the same exercise every day forever.
Exactly.
Although someone who's aging, mm-hmm. their muscles are deteriorating. So if they can maintain that, it's probably an advantage.
Exactly. Because you look normally, we'll lose about 2% per year of your muscle strength, muscle mass, basically after the age of 30. If you're active, you're exercising on a regular basis, it's about 0.5% approximately. So that's the importance of trying to keep it as long as you can.
So inactivity, you speed it up fourfold.
Oh, yes.
So it's
and
really important to be active. Now, what is the right intensity of...
This is where it's very individualized. You have to find what's going to motivate your patient. I really encourage the type of exercise that when they get done, they enjoyed it. And the way I look at high intensity, no pain, no gain, is where the high risk of injury, and that's what always worries me about, is just the injury rate and just the likelihood of I don't like to exercise. If you're going to take medicine, no matter what it is, and you don't like it, are you likely to continue doing it? Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're going to a class, you know, whatever that is, and you're having fun, you're enjoying it, and it's exercise, you're more likely to continue with that. So I try to push more for the moderate intensity, enjoying it, because I'm looking at compliance for over a long time.
All right. And then is high-intensity interval training, which we talk about mm-hmm. on this show quite a bit, is that better than sustained moderate to vigorous exercise?
If we look at biochemically and we look at the true benefit, it is. There's no denying high-intensity interval training is better short-term. But, you know, if we're looking at doing something for our patients for 2 months, 3 months maybe, but I'm always very worried about what about after that. And you have to be very...
You mean just someone choosing to maintain it? Okay.
Yeah. And that's why when you look at long-term, you know, I'm just very careful. And the other thing is the people who are monitoring your patients. When you go to a lot of gyms, you know, it could be a personal trainer who doesn't have a really good background in the different orthopedic issues and that. And again, the injury rate always comes up. And, you know, I think we're always pushing to be perfect. And if you look at the people in Sardinia, Okinawa, the blue zones, Loma Linda, California, what are they doing? They're active. Yeah. They're moving. The spirituality, all these different things come in.
And they're mostly walking. They're not doing the really vigorous intensity exercise, yet they're living long because of it. So they're just building it into their day as well, is what you're saying. And what's the ideal length of an exercise session, or how much per day? How many minutes per day?
When I talk to people about exercises, what can you fit in? You know, you're a single mom, you have two kids, and you have all these restrictions. Maybe it's 10 minutes at lunch, and that's all they can do. I'm going to take it, and I'm not going to keep encouraging more and more and more. When we set up an exercise goal, I always use the 50% rule. 50% means I want you to be able to do your exercise for the week at least 50% of the time. When you can't do that, we need to change, you know, what we're looking at and what we're setting up for you, because, you know, just that negative feedback. And I think one of the best things when Dean Ornish was talking last year is just building things off of positive reinforcement. You know, if we want to sustain things, we build them off of positives. And that's one of the things. I think when people are successful, they're more likely to continue with it. The time, I can go up to 45 minutes. Some will go up to an hour. But if you look at the risk of injury when you're doing, you know, continuous exercise, especially weight bearing, the injury rate really starts going up over an hour of exercise.
Up to an hour. So you would say the ideal would be, because we don't want to go over mm-hmm. that curve, so that the ideal would be 45 minutes?
Ideal is right around 45 minutes and 3 to 5 days a week. And this is when you're thinking of exercise. This is a part of your lifestyle. We have to be able to balance all these different things, work, family. And that's why it's very individual. And that's why when it could be 3 days a week. It could be 2 days a week for 45 minutes. And so you kind of go into their what they're doing and how we can kind of be creative and keeping them being compliant. That's more than anything.
An achievable goal more important than anything else. We'll be back. Stay with us. And we're back. Melissa is another of Brad's patients. Here's a piece of her journey from Yukon Health. Watch.
I used to pass people and they would look the other way. You know, I'd go to say hi to someone and I would literally be ignored. My mood was horrible. I felt socially isolated from so many people. I was 367 before when I started this, this whole journey. I was really unhealthy. I was getting unhealthier. It was high cholesterol, high blood pressure, My primary care recommended that I had start seeing Bradley Biscup at the Lifestyle Modification Program.
Okay, and you're using the plain non-fat Greek yogurt?
Yes. Once he had told me I was borderline diabetic, that kind of got me moving, literally step by step. I did a lot of walking in the beginning and a lot of stretching, gradually increasing to a jog. Now, with all of the effort and all of the work and all of the jogging and all of the walking and taking really good care of my health and eating right and sticking with this program, it's made such a profound difference. I've lost 158 pounds so far, and I'm still going strong.
That's awesome.
Blood pressure, cholesterol, triglycerides, even my heart rate, it's all down. It's all going down to healthy, really healthy levels. I'm feeling awesome. I'm happier. So much happier, not just in the weight loss, because it has made such an impact on my social setting and my sociability with other people. People often ask me, how did you do it? And I'll tell them, it's lifestyle modification. My goal is my health. It's not a number. It's not a pant size. I want to be healthy, healthier, and to keep it up. I'm finally able to do the things that I didn't think I could do before. It's as if I have me again.
The me she once knew, thanks to Brad, today's guest. Now it's clear that Melissa has put in the effort, but if most of us are asked if we are exercising on a regular basis, Brad tells us what the stock answer really is.
When you think of, you know, when they come out with a lot of the data about how many people are actually meeting the guidelines, those are questionnaires. And usually when our patients come in to see us, the first thing when you ask them about exercise, are you exercising on a regular basis? Oh, yeah. Because you don't want to bring negativity to it. But when you look at, they did accelerometry studies, especially with the NHANES, and they looked at how many actually are meeting the right criteria.
So they were carrying something like a Fitbit or something.
They were being monitored.
Yeah.
And less than 10%. But the more amazing thing is, initially they're saying, well, most people are exercising or doing something. Over 50% don't do any at all. And that's why when we talk about, you know, in medicine or doing things, we're always looking for that low-hanging fruit that, you know, have the biggest impact. I look at this is a raspberry bush, and we don't have to reach or anything. It's right there. We just have to get people moving a little bit to have significant impact.
So how much emphasis is there in the health system? If you've talked about, you know, your physician kind of holding you accountable, how much training do they get in exercise and how much is needed and what's best?
Well, and they did a study and they were looking specifically with physicians in med schools in the United States. And what they found is over 80% don't even one course is not required in exercise or activity. So we're going to physicians as these are supposed to be our experts and they don't even get one course.
And so we're being, you know, patients being told, don't start an exercise program without seeing your physician.
Exactly.
But physicians are not getting a lot of training about how to guide patients.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, there's certain individuals, Dr. Phillips, as far as trying to implement lifestyle medicine exercise within the medical school curriculum. And that's my goal as far as a physician assistant. How do we take this into the curriculum? How do we get this research we have, we know it's beneficial, into the PA schools, and the same thing with nurse practitioners, and being able to kind of grow off of this, and because the research is there. And I think we need to be able to give the physicians more tools, we need to train them, and that's going to kind of grow into getting better results. And I think as the healthcare system progresses, we have to be able to make these changes to sustain what we have now.
Right. What are the benefits of, we mentioned high intensity exercise, what benefits are there to someone who does really want to work out pretty vigorously?
It's, I mean, you get the benefits as far as, you know, you're looking at your borderline diabetics. It is better for insulin sensitivity, for weight loss, you do burn more calories. So overall, you look at all the different parameters, it is more beneficial. And you kind of, you don't want to kind of keep them down, you want to kind of keep them motivated. And that's why I do have some people, they do wogging, so they walk, jog.
And oh, is that what I call it? Wogging. Yeah. Okay, I like wogging.
And that way you kind of mix it up and you're still keeping them motivated, keeping them safe. So it's not that I'm saying don't do it, but just looking at the real risk benefits. And
so if we're walking, we're doing the walk jog, mm-hmm. how many minutes or how do you advise them to break it up? How many seconds mm-hmm. walking?
For each?
Yes,
yeah.
in each.
And when we think of like walking, jogging, there's an efficiency range. So in other words, when we're walking at a specific pace, we're very efficient. When we're jogging, it's the same thing. So once you kind of slow down with the jogging, it's getting more stressful, just harder to do. Then if you transition at that time, so it's kind of
so
getting a feel. Exactly.
Mm.
And because that's where you're going to gradually be able to go at a better time. And plus, you're kind of listening to your body. Because one thing I don't push for is the burning sensation in legs. Because that's the anaerobic metabolism. That's the sugar spikes. And it's going to be much more frustrating for them when they get out of bed the next day and they're really sore.
Right, because they know it's just not going to do it.
Yeah.
What are the benefits of moderate intensity exercise? For the high intensity, you said the diabetes, the insulin mm-hmm. resistance. For the moderate intensity, what?
You still get significant benefits. So when I see a patient and they're coming in, they're borderline diabetic. Their insulin level's up, their fasting glucose is up, and their triglycerides are high. So I'm focusing on moderate because the moderate intensity also is going to increase the insulin sensitivity. But it's also going to use those triglycerides as an energy source.
Right.
That way, and that's where I really customize it to what they want. And that's why when I talk to patients, it's like, what do you want the exercise to do for you? That's what we're going to focus on to get those results.
So give us some examples of a variety of moderate exercise activities.
Well, and that's where walking versus jogging, it depends on your fitness level. So if you're in really good shape, jogging and you're able to carry on a conversation, that's moderate intensity. The majority of our patients aren't going to be able to jog. Walking at a good pace, where they're able to do the talk test, that's going to be their moderate intensity. And that's why usually when patients come in, I'll do a quick walking visit. So they come in, we go through the initial, and then we'll go for a walk. About a 10-minute walk, we have a nice area to go for. And that way I can assess how they're breathing, if they have any orthopedic issues. And otherwise we'd just be sitting here talking, doing the same thing. So we might as well be moving and kind of explaining to them the exercise intensity where you're going to get the most benefit.
And so they could walk, cycle, similar, and swim and all
exactly.
of those things.
Exactly. I mean, you can stay in your own living room and just do marching in place, dancing, you know, anything, and that's where the creativity of movement.
And that's beautiful. Being able to move in the way that works for you and still accomplishes the goal of moving more. But remember to be honest with yourself. Perhaps you need to write it down at the end of each day, just how much activity you actually achieved and where you could have squeezed a little more exercise into the corners of your day. If you work at a desk, consider a peddler or a standing desk. And if you can only exercise 3 days a week rather than five, then aim for three. Remember, it's better to aim at something than to aim at nothing and hit it. Exercise needn't be drudgery. God designed it to be a fun way to boost our health and our happiness. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.